We're beginning today Parshat Devarim and Sefer Devarim, the fifth and last Sefer in the Chamisha Chomshei Torah. Sefer Devarim is called Moshe Rabbeinu Sefer. It's a reward Moshe Rabbeinu got. The Midrash says that Hashem told Moshe, when it came time for the Ten Commandments, God said, I gave two commandments to the Jewish people. And then they said they can no longer hear the Ten Commandments directly from me. They want to hear it from you, Moshe. What were the two commandments the Jewish people heard from Hashem? They heard, Anochi Hashem, I am Hashem, your God, and Lo Yielecha, you shall not have foreign gods upon me. God says, I'm the one and only God. Well, God says, Moshe, the two commandments the Jewish people heard from me, they didn't live up to. They didn't keep. They served the Egel. They served Baal Peor. But the other eight commandments that the Jewish people heard from you, Moshe, that they kept. So Hashem said, as a reward, the fifth book is going to be named Moshe's book. We know the whole Torah is called Toras Moshe. Zichru Toras Moshe Avdi, the Navi Malachi says. But this book specifically is separated from the other four of the Chamisha Chomshei Torah. What's special about Sefer Devarim? So we know the Gemara tells us that ordinarily we darshan smuchim. We say if one pasuk is written next to another pasuk, so the juxtaposition of the psukim and the stories, if we'll call them that, in the Torah is not because of a specific chronological order, but rather it's to tell us something, some theme that connects two psukim or two parshas that are one next to the other. They might be in chronological order, but they might not be. We know that Ein Mukdam U'Mu'uchar B'Torah. In the Torah, sometimes things are written out of chronological order. And that is because the Torah had a different intent with regards to... Yeah. The Torah teaches us something with regard to the juxtaposition of the parshios and the psukim. Now, this concept of smuchim is a machlokas, whether we darshan it throughout the Torah. But even the opinion in the Gemara that holds that we don't darshan smuchim throughout the Torah, in Sefer Mishneh Torah, in Sefer Dvarim, he also admits that over there we do darshan it. It seems that a lot of mitzvos are repeated in Sefer Dvarim. What is the purpose of Sefer Dvarim? So that's a big question. Who are we to say what the purpose of one of the Chamisha Chomshei Torah is? The Ramban explains that Sefer Mishneh Torah is taking place, all of Sefer Dvarim is taking place when we're situated by the Jordan. The Jewish people are camped on the eastern side of the Jordan. They're camped at Arvos Moab, and they know they're about to enter the land of Israel. And this is, so to speak, the last speech that Moshe Rabbeinu gives. It's not one speech. Sefer Dvarim begins, we're going to see, on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and Sefer Dvarim ends on Vav or Zayin Adar, when Moshe Rabbeinu passes away on Zayin Adar. So Sefer Dvarim takes place over 36 days between Aleph Shvat and Zayin Adar, the whole Sefer Dvarim. Wow. And the Ramban says the purpose is to review, expand upon the mitzvos that are very relevant to the Jewish people now that they're going to enter the land of Israel, to expand and warn and threaten with punishment for those that will transgress the mitzvos, specifically the mitzvos that Moshe Rabbeinu had great reason to be concerned that the people would not keep. We find that Avodah Zarah is repeated again and again. Don't intermarry. Don't serve Avodah Zarah. If you do, you'll be punished. A, B, C, D. And again we're warned, and we see that in spite of all these warnings, the people fell. Be it in the time of the Shoftim, be it in the time of Melachim, people were serving idols.
Aren't we told that also that technically all the Torah mitzvot are really in Eretz Yisrael is when it's really in full, like they said or some sages say that everything that is all mitzvahs and chutz la'aretz is just like a practice for when you get out of the land. So, and now that we're coming into the land, it's, you say, okay, now you weren't really pushed to do the mitzvahs, but now that we're going into the land, you are obliged to the mitzvahs in a way.
So what you're saying is the Sifri on Sefer Dvarim, the Ramban quotes it. Obviously, we can't understand it literally. We know the Gemara in Kedushin says that mitzvot sheba guf, mitzvot that I'm responsible to do with my body, I have to put on tefillin in the morning. I have to put on tzitzis if I have a four-cornered garment. All mitzvot that are not sheba aretz, all mitzvot that are not connected to the land, that are not connected to the fruits of the land, to what grows from the land, the trees, Arla, Shviyas, Shemitah, Yovel, all mitzvahs that don't pertain specifically to the crops, those mitzvahs are relevant in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. The Gemara in Kedushin makes that distinction. Yeah. So even the Sifri and the Ramban who quotes it didn't mean to say that you don't have to perform mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz.
No, I mean,
they meant to say that there's an aspect where.
But almost all, even the ones that don't seem to be connected to the land, like putting on tefillin, technically are related to the land because we say that the Torah, the land, and Am Yisrael are all one. So if
that's for sure.
One concept, we could technically say we're not okay. Our sages say we should.
We have the mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz and we have them in Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. Our performance in Chutz La'aretz is on a spiritual level lacking, because the mitzvos were given to be followed by the Jewish people, ideally in the land of Israel. Now, does that mean that I'm not performing the mitzvah? No, you're performing the mitzvah. Torah was given at Sinai, out of Eretz Yisrael. The Jewish people, their greatest sages were in Chutz La'aretz. The Talmud Bavli was written in Bavel. You can't look at Chutz La'aretz and say they're nothing. No, they're big people and they're performing mitzvahs. The ideal way of performing a mitzvah is in Eretz Yisrael. So we're starting Parshas Dvarim, Sefer Dvarim. We have very few new mitzvos in Sefer Dvarim. We do have new mitzvos. We have the mitzvah of Yibum. We're going to see if a husband and wife do not have children, and then the husband passes away, so the wife has a mitzvah to marry his brother. We have the mitzvah of Motzi Shemra. If a man marries a girl, and then he comes and he says she wasn't a virgin, so the whole story, if he's lying, you take him to court, etc. The whole parsha and the mitzvah of gerushin, divorce, doesn't show up in the rest of the Torah. It shows up in Sefer Dvarim. The parsha of Edim Zomim, if witnesses testify, and then after their testimony, when we're about to enact what they've testified about, other witnesses walk into Beis Din and say, Imanu Eisam, you were with us during the time you claim you saw the crime being committed. So then we punish them as they intended to punish the defendant. So there are a few mitzvahs that are new in Sefer Dvarim that we don't encounter in the rest of the Torah. The Ramban stresses that these mitzvahs were all given at Sinai, the first year we left Mitzrayim. And he offers an idea as to why they're mentioned here, but basically he says they were given at Sinai. Says, note that throughout Sefer Dvarim we don't find a pasuk that says, "Vaydaber Hashem Moshe." Shem said to Moshe, "Tzav es Bnei Yisrael, go command the Jewish people." Because in Sefer Dvarim we won't find the new commandment. It's recorded here, but it's not a new commandment from here. We don't find the Daber of Bnei Israel v'amarta aleihem, go tell the Jewish people, and the mitzvah. We don't find that in Sefer Dvarim. So that's, if you recall, on Sunday we asked that the Sefer begins a little differently than we're accustomed to. Begins Eila Dvarim Asher Diber Moshe. It doesn't say Vaydaber, etc., like we're used to, or Vayomer. So that's one understanding that we have from the Ramban that stresses the difference between Sefer Dvarim and the other four of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Sefer Dvarim begins, as we noted on Sunday, with a recording of many places where the Jewish people travel. And Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu began Sefer Dvarim with rebuking the Jewish people. The Ramban explains that Moshe Rabbeinu is preparing the people for their enter to the land of Israel. He's preparing them with a review of many pertinent mitzvos, a warning of many pertinent pitfalls, and he's warning them, look where you messed up. In a minute we're going to enumerate the places that he lists. At the same time, he's telling them, you stand a chance. We say in Rosh Hashanah, we say in Yom Kippur, we say in Slichos, we say the pasuk from Tehillim, Ki imecha hasilicha leman tivarei. God is a forgiving God. We don't stand a chance in this world if God weren't forgiving us. We say, Ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov ve'lo yechetot. There's no such tzaddik in the land that does good and doesn't mess up. Chazal tells that when God wanted to create the world, he took counsel with his angels. Why? To teach us a lesson, to take counsel. That any person, any king should know to learn from his creator that he should take counsel. And the Midrash goes on to show us that the greatest kingdoms, King David's kingdom, the greatest kingdoms had wise counselors, that the king took their counsel. So God wanted to give us that lesson, and before creating the world, he took counsel. And they came to the conclusion that the world can't last unless we create tshuva before we create the world, the ability to go back. The pasuk says in Mishlei, Ki sheva yipot tzadik vakam. Tzadik falls seven times and gets up again. Chazal tell us that there are numbers in Tanakh that don't mean literally that number, but they represent many. The number 1,000 we find in Tanakh. It says a few times the number 100, Ma'akos Ksil Ne'ah. And the number 7 is also a number that represents many. When we say the number 7, we don't always mean literally 7. So Chazal tell us that King Solomon, in his wisdom, he said, Ki sheva yipol tzadik vakam. A tzadik is not one who constantly goes up, but he falls 7 times, which means many times. It doesn't mean literally 7. A tzaddik is one who knows how to get up when he falls. Rabbi Wein used to say that life is like a cardiogram. You see the beeps, up, down, and when it's a straight line, beep, that's when a person's dead. A person has to be prepared that he will fall. The prophet tells us that Avram Avinu, Avram the patriarch, he needed Hashem's support. The Navi, I think Yeshaya says, Hashem says, I supported him. What does that mean? That means even someone like Avraham had his ups, had his downs, and God helped him. So people have to be prepared that life is filled with ups and downs. There's no such thing as a straight up. Moshe Rabbeinu begins Sefer Dvarim on the one hand with rebuke, telling the Jewish people, look what you did wrong, learn from your mistakes. But this rebuke is coupled with a boost, a shot in the arm. He's telling them, you stand a chance because God is a merciful God and He'll let you do tshuva. Eila devarim asher diber Moshe al kol Yisrael. These are the words, the things that Moshe spoke to all of Am Yisrael. He gathered all the Jewish people together before he rebuked them, because he knew that if he'd speak to some of them, the others would have said, what? You heard that son of Amram tell you this and this he did wrong. Why didn't you answer him like this? Why didn't you answer him like that? We had 10 different answers. So Moshe said, I'm gathering you all together. If anyone has an answer, speak up. We have to clear the table. This is what you did wrong, and you have to make up for it. We have to ask ourselves a question, which I haven't seen addressed. Sefer Dvarim is taking place at the end of the 40 years. The sins that we're going to enumerate, the sin of sending the Meraglim, the the sin when they said, woe that we would have died when we were back in Mitzrayim when we had plenty of meat. The sin that they told Moshe when they were by the Yamzuf, about to leave Egypt, and they didn't see how they were going to cross. The sea hadn't split. And they said, what, were there no graves in Egypt? You have to take us out here to die? They spoke cynically to Moshe. The sin where they turned to Moshe and they said, we're disgusted with this bread, the man. The sin with Korah, that they rebelled. The people were willing to go with Korah. And the sin of the Egel, all of these took place within the first 2 years that we were in the desert. The only sin that Moshe Rabbeinu enumerates here that took place now is the sin of Baal Peor, the sin where the men went with the women of Moab and they served the idols of Moab, of the Midianite women. So 6 out of 7 of the sins that Moshe Rabbeinu enumerates happened 38 years ago. So that in and of itself wouldn't bother me, because Chazal tell us that the reason Moshe Rabbeinu waited till now, he learned from Yaakov, that you don't rebuke a person till it's the end of time. If you're going to rebuke him, then chances are he won't listen to your rebuke, you'll have to rebuke him again, he's going to be embarrassed from you. There are many reasons that Chazal enumerate why we don't rebuke a person until it's almost over. Moshe Rabbeinu went in the footsteps of Yaakov Avinu, he waited till the end, the last 36 days of his life before he gave rebuke. Yoshua did the same thing. Shmuel did the same thing. David HaMelech, King David, did the same. All our leaders, they weren't fond of rebuking. And when they did it in a way that was clear. They weren't doing it for their own benefit. They were doing it for the other one's benefit at the end of their days.
Yeah, but then in the meantime, that person lost all his
ears. Oh, so that's a good question. We find that Moshe Rabbeinu told them they sinned. It's different. Right away Hashem reacts. It's not that they weren't told you did something wrong. They were. But to come down and say, okay, you did this wrong, you have to fix it. You did this wrong, you got to fix that too. To sit down and do an accounting. Look at what you did. Look at what you have to strengthen. That Moshe Rabbeinu did at the end of his days. The question that bothers me is that 6 out of 7 things that he's rebuking them for are things that happened when they were all kids. What happened here? All the adults died. Everyone from age 20 and up died. So who's he talking to? He's talking to the next generation. The generation that's about to enter the land. And he's telling them, you did this and you did that. One second, I didn't do it. My father did it.
We know that if you don't talk against what your father did, means that you're...
So I don't know if you have to talk against.
The sins. Hashem will punish the generations.
Oh, so that's what I thought. But again, usually I try to be careful that whatever I say is quoted, either from Chazal, from the Rishonim, from the Midrash. Here I'm going off on a limb. This is I thought just like you that it's possible to understand what Chazal told us about these psukim, that Moshe Rabbeinu was warning them, like you just said, Chazal. Explain the pasuk, "Umshalem avon avos el chek b'nehem." Hashem says, "I pay the children for their father's sins," and yet Hashem says, "Lo yumsu banim al avos." Sons won't be killed for their father's sins. Sons shouldn't really be punished for what their fathers did. So Chazal told us that if the sons are as sinful as their parents were, then they get punished for what their parents did as well if they continue their bad ways. And we find when we say slichos, when we ask for forgiveness, in a month from now, we're going to start getting ready for Rosh Hashanah. So, what do we say? We say, God, I'm not saying I didn't sin. Right? We say, She'en anachnu azei fanim ukshei oref. We don't have a brazen face and a tough neck. Lomar lefanecha, to say before you God, sadikim anachnu velo chatanu, we're righteous, we haven't sinned. Aval, but the truth is, no, we're not saying that. Anachnu, we, va'avoseinu, we had our forefathers, chatanu, have sinned. What am I bringing my father into this? I sinned. So, what we're saying is, we're continuing in certain things that our fathers did wrong. We're asking for forgiveness for that as well. That's one understanding of what we're saying there. So it's possible that's why Moshe is telling him this, but what bothers me is that I haven't yet found anyone that addresses the question. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know.
Just reminding them, basically, that remember, if you continue your father's footsteps, you'll be punished.
But it doesn't say that. I agree with you. Everything I agree.
Right.
Just should have said that.
Yeah, right.
So we're holding the 40th year from the time we left Egypt, and we're.
How come we don't say Slichos during the 4 weeks of Bina Mitzarim then?
We do other things. We commemorate the mourning. We're supposed to do tshuva, but the Bina Mitzarim is a time when we're mourning. It's. Part of the mourning is we're supposed to recognize what we've done wrong and fix it. But the month that was set aside for tshuva is the month of Elul. Next time we get together, it'll probably be Rosh Chodesh Elul, and then we'll have to discuss that. But of course, during the month, the 3 weeks, we're also supposed to do tshuva. That's for sure true. Moshe Rabbeinu gathers all the Jewish people together and begins with this rebuke of the Jewish people, and we start a review. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he comes to rebuke the Jewish people, he doesn't do it until he's first conquered part of the land of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned that if he doesn't first conquer Sihon and Og, these two powerful kings, if he doesn't gain part of the land, then the Jewish people are going to say, what's he coming and telling us he did this wrong and that wrong? He's just trying to find an excuse because he doesn't have strength to bring us into the land. So he's telling us he did this wrong and that wrong. He's spending his time telling us what we did wrong. But after Moshe Rabbeinu defeated these two powerful kings, Sihon was a tremendously powerful king. He had a son who was also very powerful who joined him to war. He was so powerful that he didn't even call Og to join him in this war. He was confident he'd defeat the Jewish people, and if it were left in the hands of the forces of nature, he would have won. But God intervened and had us win him. The same thing, Og, tremendously powerful king, tremendously powerful people, and if not for God's intervention, we would have lost. After Moshe Rabbeinu conquered them, then he came to speak to the Jewish people. And that's something we have to remember. We're very quick to assume that other people are going to assume when I say something that I'm saying it with the proper intent. We expect other people to think highly of us. And Chazal constantly taught us not that way. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, when he came to speak to the Jewish people, he said, I can't talk till I've proven myself. Otherwise, what can I expect? They're going to say, you fake. You can't bring us in. You're going to die now. You don't have the strength to take us in. So that's what's left. You rebuke us. So first Moshe Rabbeinu won the wars. We find the same thing with the Navi Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah. God sent him to rebuke the Jewish people as a young kid. So he said, God, what have I done for them? If I come now, the first thing I do is rebuke them. They'll look at me and say, what are you worth? You're just telling us what we did wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu gives the Jewish people the review of the Torah, and he writes 13 Sifrei Torah during this period. During this period of 36 days, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. One Sifrei Torah was given to each Shevet, and one Shevet... Oh, good point, it is impossible. That's true. It's a nace.
You can't... A year to make one.
No human being could write 13 Sifrei Torah in 36 days. That's an ace. Chazal tells us that's an ace. That wasn't something that was humanly possible for anyone else to do. Moshe Rabbeinu had a special miracle that he was able to write a Sefer Torah for each of the tribes, and one that was left in the Mishkan.
I thought he had written that one already before.
I don't know. The Rambam writes, what I just said is from the Rambam. The Rambam's introduction to Mishnayos. I don't know. I don't know.
Two toes.
Well, he was busy. He was still the Jewish people's leader. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, when we were at Mount Sinai, God told us, Rav lochem sheves bahar hazeh. You've been by this mountain a great time. What does it mean, a great time? So simply understood, it means a lot of time has passed that you're here. But Chazal tell us that God said to the Jewish people, you had a lot of greatness from this mountain. When you came to Mount Sinai, you were one people under Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. When it came time to go, so you had a Mishkan, you had the menorah, you had all the utensils, you had a Sanhedrin, you had officers, you had governors in charge of thousands, governors in charge of hundreds. A lot of people got greatness when we left this mountain. The Jewish people got greatness when they left the mountain. God says, go, I want you to come to the land of Israel. If you recall, that was the initial plan. You were supposed to leave Egypt, come to Mount Sinai, get the Torah, go to the land of Israel. From Mount Sinai to the land of Israel was 11 days' journey. God shortened it. In 3 days, we covered the land. We were ready to enter the land of Israel. And God told the Jewish people, look, I've given the land before you. Come on in, inherit the land. You don't even have to fight. If we wouldn't have sinned with the Meraglim, with the spies, we would have been able to enter the land without lifting a sword. And at that point, when we were ready to leave Sinai, God told us to leave. Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people, I can't handle you alone. God has made you a great people. You're like the stars in heaven. And may God add upon you thousandfold and bless you as he told you, but I can't do it alone. So Chazal asked, what does it mean? If Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it alone, who could? What was Moshe Rabbeinu saying? So firstly, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, you're a great people. And you're not like any other people. God has said that if I make a mistake in judging you, I get punished greatly. God values the Jewish people, and those who judge them have to be on a tremendously high level. Who could possibly judge such a weighty people? People who God says, I'm protecting them if you mess up. I need helpers. Moshe Rabbeinu says, how could I carry you alone? How could I carry your toils, your burdens, your fights? So Chazal said, what was Moshe Rabbeinu saying in this pasuk? Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, you were nudniks. Torchachem, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I was about to finish a court case. One guy sees that his friend is about to win and he says, wait. I have more witnesses. Let me go bring more witnesses. Maybe I'll think of another claim. So it was a pain in the neck to judge you. The guy would come and claim, I want more jurors on the court. I want not more jurors, I want more judges on the court. It was a pain in the neck to judge the Jewish people. Your weight, Chazal say, the Jewish people, they were apikarsin. Moshe Rabbeinu would wake up, he'd leave his house early, so they'd say, why is that, you know, son of Amram, the Amram's kid, why is he leaving early? Notice the disrespect with which they refer to Moshe Rabbeinu. Must be he had a fight with the home. He'd leave late. They say, why is he leaving late? Oh, he's plotting against us. He's thinking what to do against us. Whatever he did, they looked at it badly. And they used to have fights. Really, this pasuk should be the beginning of the second aliyah. The pasuk begins, Echa esa levadi torchachem umasachem v'rivchem. How could I carry alone your weights, your burdens, your fights? Moshe Rabbeinu said. But our custom, at least many Ashkenazim have the custom, that this pasuk is read with the intonations of Echa. We lane it as though we were laning Echa. And Parshas Dvarim always falls out Shabbos Chazon, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. We always read the Haftarah of Isaiah, Yeshaya, Perek Aleph, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz, the prophecy of Yeshaya about how sinful the Jewish people were at the time and how they're going to be punished. And this is an introduction to Tisha B'Av. So the custom is that we read the Pasuk as though we were reading Eicha, and the Pasuk begins with Eicha. We read this pasuk as though we were reading Eicha. So we don't want to begin with a sad tune. We don't want to begin with something sad. So our custom is that we end the aliyah pasuk earlier. Some chumashim already printed as though the aliyah is supposed to end there. We end Rishon, we end the first aliyah at the end of pasuk Yud, and we start the second aliyah with Hashem Elokei Avosechem. Some have the custom that they end it normally and they just repeat the last pasuk that they read, Hashem Elokei Avosechem, pasuk Yud Aleph. They repeat that before they read the pasuk of Eicha. Now it's interesting to note, we mentioned a minute ago, that all of Sefer Dvarim takes place in 36 days. from Rosh Chodesh Shvat to Zayin Adar. And as I was learning today, I noticed that it could all be summarized with the word Eicha. Eicha is the gematria of 36. We begin Sefer Dvarim, Eicha is Salav Adi. We begin Sefer Dvarim on the week that we're going to read Eicha. And Eicha is the gematria of 36. The whole Sefer took place in 36 days. Right, right. Pasuk Yud Beis. Perek Av, Pasuk Yud Beis.
Aleph, Yud Beis.
Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis. The first word is Eicha. Eicha means how. The prophet Yirmiyahu, when he prophesied about the destruction, so before the destruction he already wrote the Megillah of Eicha, and he gave it to the Jewish king and warned him this is what's going to be. And the Jewish king read how Eicha, there's a lamentation, Eicha Yoshevav Adad, how has the beautiful city of Jerusalem sat desolate, alone, like a widow. So that's why the Megillah is called Eicha, because the Navi again and again asks, how could this and this be, how, etc. So Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people when they were about to leave Har Sinai, about to enter the land of Israel, he tells them, I want you to give forth people who are wise, people who have understanding, people who know their tribes and their tribes know them. I want to place them as your leaders. They're going to be on top of you, they're going to judge you. Now, in truth, if a person has the choice of learning from Moshe who heard from Hashem, or learning from someone who learned from Moshe who learned from Hashem, they should have preferred Moshe Rabbeinu. But they didn't. They said, good idea. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I know what you were thinking. You were thinking, good, I'll get a judge from my tribe. I know him. I'll be able to convince him I'm right. You know, smear him on this side, smear him on that side, get a little bribing.
Didn't we already back in the Parsha of Yitro, like,
this is a review. Moshe Rabbeinu is going over with them different things that they did wrong.
He's not picking another 1,000 over another 100.
No, he's not picking. This is a review. He's telling them, this is what we did. And you told me, good, you wanted new leaders.
You mentioned the battle against Sihon and Og. Was that actually something that took place during these 36 days?
No. The battle of Sihon and Og was before these 36 days. The battle of Sihon and Og was in Sefer Bamidbar. No. We just said that the Torah testifies that Moshe Rabbeinu only gave the speech after he had already conquered Sihon and Og.
Every event in Sefer Devarim is something that everything Moshe talks about is something that
already almost. Towards the end, we're going to see Moshe Rabbeinu. We have a new recording of what happens during these 36 days.
And he had time to repeat all the laws of the foremost and write 13 separate covenants.
That's Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu told them, give me people, Vasimim Beroshechem, Chazal Darshan, Vasimim Vaashimim, that the responsibility of being a leader is like an Oshma, like a fault. What does it mean? What they do wrong? They're being appointed leaders. So Chazal told us that our leaders are responsible for us. And our leaders are responsible not only to judge us when we've done something wrong and rebuke us when we've done something wrong, but also to see to it that we don't do something wrong. If they see something wrong about to occur, they should say, no, this cannot be. That's the job of a leader. Chazal tells us that if there's a rabbi that his congregation loves him, he's not doing a good job. And he's being too nice to them. His job isn't to be their best friend in the way that they'd like him to be. His job is to be their best friend in the truest way that he could. He's supposed to help them do what's right. Now that means that sometimes he's going to have to tell them, no, you can't do this, and no, you shouldn't do that. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told to appoint judges, and he said, I'm going to appoint judges, Vasimim Beroshechem Vashimim. I'm putting them there, they're going to be at fault if you're at fault. And this goes back to what we discussed last week, that the Kohen Gadol, who's supposed to be the greatest Talmud Chacham, he obviously has a greater responsibility to see fit that the Jewish people don't sin. And if we have murderers in our midst, then we say trickle-down effect, well, now we'll trickle back up. It's his responsibility. Chazal tell us that there were generations where the generation was the way it should have been because of the leaders. and when generations were not the way they should have been, then the leaders are to blame. Throughout the time of Shoftim, we discussed, the leaders were blamed. How come they weren't traveling among the people teaching Torah? We start Sefer Shmuel, we encounter Eli, we encounter Elkanah. Elkanah was traveling, teaching Torah. The Jewish people went back on track. So we appointed judges, we appointed people who were in charge. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, I told the judges, listen between your brethren and judge righteously. Bein ish uvein achiv uvein geiro. Between a man, his brother, uvein geiro. What does geiro mean? So it's interesting. Rashi says that geiro comes from the word oger. Oger means to gather. The man who he's arguing with is gathering proofs against him. So that's why it's called geiro. He's gathering. So Moshe Rabbeinu warned the judges. He told them, you have to take things slowly. Even if you've had the same question two or three times, think it through again when it comes up again. Don't say, I want to judge over the $1 million cases. If there comes a case before you that's over a shekel, you have to judge it just as though you were judging a case over a million shekel. You have to take every case seriously. And you have to be righteous in every case. Moshe Rabbeinu said he would look for people who had 7 positive traits. He didn't find people with all of these traits. He only found people with 3 of these traits. People who were anoshim, chachomim, and yiduim. He didn't find a novel. Chazal tells us it's very hard to find someone who's a novel. Someone who has understanding. Who can understand things from within things. Chacham, he knows things. A novel can understand beyond what he knows. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't find people like that. It wasn't easy. The parasha says that he said, I will look for people who are chachamim, nevonim, yiduim, etc. And when he found them, it says they had, and it lists the traits, and it doesn't say all the traits that it enumerated before when he said what he was looking for. Moshe Rabbeinu warns them, a very famous line nowadays, Lo soguru mipinei ish, pasuk yud zayin, don't fear any man ki amishpot le'lokim hu. For the justice is in God's hands. You have to recognize that you're messengers of God as the judges, and you're not allowed to fear any man. This became very famous 20, 30 years ago when Rabbi Cook fought against giving up lands of Israel. So the signs always had in big letters on top, Lo Toguru, do not fear. You have to say what the Torah says and fear not.
Lotakiru?
Lotaguru. Do not be scared.
Lotakiru is a do not respect.
No, Lotakiru panim is don't recognize. Don't say, oh, I know him. I'll be nicer to him in court.
In English, they translate, you shall not respect persons in judgment.
Okay, you can translate it that way.
Yeah, right.
So Chazal tell us it goes both ways. On the one hand, don't say, this guy came to court, he's a millionaire. The other guy only wants $10. Oh, he should give it to him anyways as tzedakah. And obviously, he can't go the other way either and say, well, he's a millionaire. What, I'll make him lose in court? I'll let him win in court. And afterwards, I'll tell him, you know what, he was really right. Give him the money. No, you have to judge what the correct judgment is. Moshe Rabbeinu told them how to judge the cases. And then, after we had our judges, we leave Mount Sinai. We're on our way to enter the land of Israel. We travel. We come to Kadesh Barnea, and Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, look, the land's before us, let's go inherit it.
Hold on, weren't they up by the Jordan?
We're reviewing. We're going back 40 years. So Moshe Rabbeinu's telling them, when we left Mount Sinai, we were on the verge of entering the land. I said, okay, let's go in and inherit. And you all came to me, all mixed up and confused, not in an orderly fashion. The elders were pushing the zkenim, the elders were pushing the nesim, the heads of the tribes, and the young ones were pushing the elders. Everyone came in turmoil and said, let's send people out. Let's check out the land before we go. Figure out how we should attack, what cities we should attack first, how we should travel. Let's check out the land before we go in. Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's a good idea. God said, it's a bad idea. But God didn't tell anyone that. God said, if you want to, okay, I was in a rush to get you in. You're stopping and you're procrastinating. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu willing to go with the Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu said, if I tell them no, then they'll think, you know what? He's scared. He's got something to hide. If I tell them, yeah, go ahead, then it's like a person who's selling something. He's selling a donkey. Chazal, I'll give this example. And the buyer comes to him and he says, is the donkey good? He says, yeah. Can I take it for a test ride up the mountain? Yeah. Down the mountain? Yeah. I want to take it on this and this journey? Yeah, whatever you want, you can test it. It's a good donkey. The guy hears this, he says, okay, then it must be a good donkey. If you're so confident, you're willing to give me a test ride, so then he's willing to buy it. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. He said, you want to send people? No problem. Moshe Rabbeinu chose the best 12, and we had a representative for Reuven, Shimon, Levi, did not have a representative. The tribe of Levi, being that they weren't going to inherit the land, they had no purpose for these, so they didn't have a representative. Moshe Rabbeinu chose the best, and we know that they came back and they got the people riled up. The people refused to go in. They sat in their tents and they said, God hates us. God loved them. God wanted to bring them to the land. They said, God took us out of Egypt, this beautiful land. Egypt was so luscious with the Nile. What do we have to leave Egypt for?
Moses' words or Hashem's words again.
That was in a different time, yeah. So the people were in their tents speaking badly about God. Chazal tell us that this gives us great insight to human tendencies. Our tendency is to think that what I feel towards someone else is what he feels towards me. If I am upset at my friend, I hate him, so then the tendency is to suddenly start feeling like he hates me. And it could be I hate him because he did something or didn't do something. So the feelings that I have in my heart, I automatically project onto him. I say, you know why he did that? Because he hates me. I don't begin thinking, you know, maybe he didn't realize, maybe he didn't think of it, maybe he was busy doing something else. I don't think of that. I automatically project my emotions onto him. And then I'm allowed to hate him more because he hates me. So the Jewish people did that here. They were hating God. They were upset at God. So automatically, what did they say? They said, "Bisinas Hashem olsonu." God hates us. That's why he took us out of Egypt. That's why he brought us here. Think about it. They just went through all these miracles. God put up with all kinds of things that we did wrong. And what do we say when we're standing there? Say, God hates us. So Chazal say that's what happened here. The Jewish people were projecting onto God what they themselves felt towards Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu tried to dissuade them. The people said, our brothers have melted our hearts. They said there's a tremendous people there. There are cities, Arim Gidolos of Tzuros Bashamayim. The fortification reaches heaven. So did the fortifications reach heaven? Did anyone say the fortifications reached heaven? Did anyone say there were walls that reached heavens? Here we have something Chazal say, Dibru Aksuvim Beloshon Havai. The psukim spoke in exaggeration. And this opens up a topic that we'll touch for a minute, the concept of exaggeration in the Torah. When we say there's exaggeration, so that seems to be an open door. So maybe when it says that God said, I'm the only God, how do you know that's not an exaggeration? God says, I'm one. Well, maybe it was two. So obviously we don't say that. That's heresy. So how do we know when what we read is accurate and when it isn't? So Chazal told us that it's a very difficult thing to ever say that something in the Torah is not to be understood exactly the way it's written. And Chazal had very specific guidelines, and they told us. And where they didn't tell us that it is a term of exaggeration, then it's to be understood literally. Chazal tell us on the Pasuk, V'chol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos ve'es ha'lapidim. The nation saw the sounds. They saw God speaking and they saw the sounds. How do you see sound? So Chazal say, yes, there was a miracle then, and they saw the sounds, they saw the words in the air. So we would say, maybe it means something else, maybe it's an exaggeration. No, Chazal say it's no exaggeration. So here we have a pasuk which Chazal tells is an exaggeration. And there's a letter from Rav Haigon, if I'm not mistaken, either Rav Hai or Rav Shri Raigon. One of them he writes this. He says, we always have to look back to Chazan, where they didn't tell us that's an exaggeration, so it isn't. Moshe Rabbeinu told us, don't fear them. Hashem, your God, is going before you. He'll fight you just as he did in Egypt. Look in the desert, how Hashem protected you, carried you like a child. Look how God brought you till here. And suddenly you don't believe in God. Look at what God did for you. God heard this. God was upset at the Jewish people, and God swore that he's not letting these people in, this generation. The exception is Kalev. And as Moshe Rabbeinu is enumerating the people who don't enter the land, he says, and you know what else you did wrong? You caused me not to enter the land either. You got me all upset. You went and fought. You were, it says, what's Mei Meriva? Sheravu Bnei Yisrael Hashem. They, so to speak, fought God. They were argumentative. And they got Moshe upset, and they caused Moshe and Aaron to sin, and therefore Moshe and Aaron didn't enter the land. And that's why Moshe says the only exceptions are Kalev, that God promised him he'll get Hebron, the land which he went on his own, that's where he went to pray, and Yeshua, he's my disciple, he's going to be taking him into the land. And those children who you thought would be wiped out, they're the ones that are going to inherit the land. The people thought, okay, we're going to go take the land. And Moshe said, no, don't go, because you don't stand a chance. There, some listened and some didn't, and they were attacked. And then the pasuk says, they were chased, just as the bees chase. Vayakisu eschem b'seir ad chorma. And they beat you, however we understand the word vayakisu, until chorma. So one understanding says that just like a bee, when it stings a person, it dies. So too, every time they'd kill a person, they'd hit him, and they'd drop dead. And nonetheless, they wanted so badly to hit the Jewish people, they were still chasing them. But there's another understanding. Bechizkuni points out that the pasuk never records how many people were killed at this point. So the Chizkuni says, what the pasuk means to say is like bees. When a bee stings a person, the person hurts, but he's not dead. And that's what the pasuk is saying, the Chizkuni says, that they chased after us and they beat us, but no one came out dead. People came out wounded, but it was like being stung by a bee, that no one gets killed from it. What? We're about to start Perek Gimel. So we're at Chamishi. Hashem tells the Jewish people, at the end of the 40 years, it's time to enter the land. You're going to pass by Esav. Don't fight them, because you're not getting any of their land. I gave it to Esav. If you want, buy from them food. Show them that you're wealthy. It's a Kiddush Hashem. They'll see that God is taking care of you, but you can't fight them. We pass Esav, and we come to the desert of Moab. Hashem tells us, do not place a siege on Moab, and don't go to war against them. When we pass the people of Ammon, they're next on the list. God says, don't fight them and don't scare them. But when we pass the people of Moab, God didn't say that. All he said was, don't attack them. The Jewish people heard this. They said, okay, we won't attack. But when we pass by, we'll pass by with our armor, we'll pass by as brave people, and we'll scare them. The Moabites got scared. What did they do? They called Bilam. They called Bilam. Bilam caused the Jewish people to sin. The Jewish people sinned. A lot of people got killed. What caused all this to happen? The fact that when God said, don't fight them, so the people said, okay, we won't fight them, but we could scare them. So they were within the letter of the law. It's true. But look what it caused. Here we have a recording of who owned which land. This land passed from this nation onto this nation. Who owned which lands? What's the importance of that? So on a simple understanding, the pasuk is telling us which lands we're not allowed to have, which lands belonged to the children of Lot and which didn't. But the Rishonim explain that there are two understandings as to why these lands had to be enumerated who owned what. One understanding is that it these lands that are enumerated here once belonged to the seven nations in the land of Israel. So the Jewish people could have had a claim. You know, it once belonged to them, and God said, we're getting their land, so we should be able to take this land as well. So God told them, no. This was captured by this people, this was captured by that people, you're not allowed to take it. The other understanding says that we find that when God promised Avram, our patriarch, Abraham, that he would get the land of Israel, there are 10 nations enumerated, not only 7. And these nations that are enumerated here, that we shouldn't fight them, so these nations are the other 3 that in the time to come, in the time of Mashiach, we're going to get them. But now God is saying, even though I promised them to Avram, don't go by that promise. You're not getting these lands. It's interesting that in the beginning of the parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu blessed the Jewish people. He said, God should bless you 1,000-fold. The Jewish people should be 1,000 times what it is now. So one understanding is that they should multiply, and the Jewish people did. But the Rambam quotes this, and the Rambam says that Moshe Rabbeinu was looking to the time of Mashiach, when we find in many prophets that they say how the nations are going to recognize that the Jewish religion is the true religion, and they're going to join the Jewish religion. So then the nations of the world are going to join, and the Jewish people are going to be 1,000 times what they were. What's interesting with this understanding is that this is a concept that we find in the Nevi'im, but according to the Rambam, we find it right here. That Moshe Rabbeinu was saying this already in the Torah, that he's looking to a time when the Jewish people will be compounded 1,000-fold.
But then, already by the time of Mashiach, no conversions will be allowed. So,
it's a good question. First of all, it's a machlokes, if I remember correctly, whether there will be or won't be allowed. And secondly, I don't know. I don't know. And the parsha ends with a recording of the last thing we saw. We saw it in the last parshios, how we fought Sichon and Og. Now, the pasuk explains to us how huge Og Melech HaBashan was by telling us how huge his bed was. So it says his bed was 9 amos long, ba'amas ish, the amma of a man. So an amma we know is an arm's length. This is called an amma, the arm, right? When Batya extends her hand to take Moshe from the waters, so it says, vatishlach es amoso, she extended her hand. So Rashi explains that if you measured it with O, with his huge hand, then it was 9 of his huge hands. So then we don't know how big that was. But the Rambam says not that way. The Rambam says it was 9 amos long, like a regular human hand. And the Rambam figures out the math. He says Og Melech HaBashan was twice the size of a regular man. It was big. It was twice the size of an average man. Nothing beyond that. We know there are midrashim that say he had clouds as his necklace, etc. But the Rambam says in the Moreh Nevuchim that Pashut Pshat is that no, Og was just twice the size of a regular person. The Parsha gives us the deal that Moshe Rabbeinu did with Bnei Ruvim, Bnei Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. And then Yoshua is given the commandment. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I told Yoshua that at that time, you see what Hashem did to these two kings, so to Hashem should do to all the nations that you cross over. Do not fear them, for Hashem is the one fighting for you. And we're waiting to see that today again.